welcome to Inspire Indeed on WRAR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, radio for the rest of us. My name is Elaine Summerfield. I'm your host for Inspire Indeed, where we're learning about community issues and the nonprofits and the innovative change makers that are working to address them. And hopefully you'll be inspired to think about how you're making a difference with your deeds. Today we're going to hear about an incredible place tucked away out on West Broad. For over 150 years, it has been transforming lives for youth and giving them a better chance at a happy, productive life. Today, Virginia Home for Boys and Girls continues its legacy of serving at-risk youth through a variety of programs. And here to share more are Claiborne Mason, president of Virginia Home for Boys and Girls, and Pendle Wisnant, the Volunteer of the Year for Virginia Home for Boys and Girls, recently named. So welcome, both of you.
Thank you, Elaine. Glad to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Well, it's great to have you both here. Well, Virginia Home for Boys and Girls has a long history in our community, and I certainly don't want to take up our time talking about what has been in the past. I'd rather focus on what you guys are currently focused on.
Sure.
But why don't you, Claiborne, just to give us some context, give us a snapshot of what the history of the home is.
Yes. Well, since 1846, as you mentioned, we have deep roots in our community. And while we have evolved from being an orphanage for boys back then, we've always stayed true to our mission. And today we are Virginia Home for Boys and Girls, where we serve at-risk youth on our 44-acre campus, primarily through our group home programs and our alternative education school.
So with your group home programs, can you tell us a little bit about that? Is that what's taking place out there on your 44-acre campus?
Yes. Well, our school is also located on the campus, but we have five group homes open. Each of them accommodates up to eight teenagers living in the home with a married couple, the teaching parents that are in the home. Our children come to us with serious social, emotional, and behavioral challenges, and we work with them to help them overcome that, teaching them life skills, teaching them behavioral skills so that they can transition as quickly and safely as possible back into the community, preferably back into their home of origin.
So how do they come to you? Are they referred by different agencies?
They are. They are referred through the Department of Social Services, and when the department detects a need or an issue in a home, what they do first and foremost is try to do an assessment, and because taking a child out of their home is the action of last resort. But sometimes a child really needs that more intense level of therapeutic support that we can provide in a group home environment.
So DSS, or Departments of Social Services, they are working with families to identify the children who would benefit from being placed in your services. And then do they become a part of the foster care system then that point?
Well, sometimes foster care is the first step. Mm-hmm. So going into a group home environment would be if a child would not thrive well or be supported well in a foster care program. What happens generally is when they do come to our group homes, what we'll do is try to work with the child, work with the family together, either to place them back in the family or step them down into a foster care environment.
So so you are like a step beyond foster care environment.
We are.
So the foster care environment, just to help me understand, that's more when it's a family, not a teaching family, but maybe a mother and a father in their own home providing foster care services.
Yes, that's correct. And there are a couple of levels of foster care. Treatment foster care is often the next step down from a residential program like ours,
okay,
where the families are especially trained.
So I gather then that those youth that are coming to you are those with the most serious challenges.
They are. They really do have serious emotional disorder issues.
Well, like what kinds of challenges or issues are they coming with?
Well, some mental health challenges. We see children with bipolar disorder, reactive attachment disorder, associative disorders. We also see children who just lack the coping skills to be able to function normally in a social or family environment. Oftentimes, these children have been the victims of abuse or neglect in the home, and that can cause so many problems for them.
Mm-hmm. For long term. And they may have been experiencing that for years and years before they got to you, right?
Yes, early intervention is the key. By the time these youth get to us, we serve children 11 to 17. Sometimes they have been experiencing this for a long time. It makes it harder and more challenging to work with them, but we can make progress with these children and families. families.
Okay, so at Virginia Home for Boys and Girls, you said you have five different homes mm-hmm. with the teaching parent model.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that model. What sets it apart from other group home settings?
Yes. The teaching family model is an evidence-based practice. We are the only certified installation of the teaching family model in the state of Virginia, which means we go through the rigorous training and evaluation and triennial inspections to make sure that we are upholding the standards. At the core is the fact that you have in each home a married couple that lives full-time in the home. They work with the children day in and day out. Every interaction with the child is a teaching opportunity. So they live within the home with the kids, and it's a very, very effective way of providing not just a place for a child to live, but a warm, nurturing, loving environment that allows the child to thrive while they're also learning new skills.
So are the teaching parents also working outside of the home? No, they really do work full-time right there.
It's a full-time job. They get 8 days off per month. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they're there with the children 24/7.
Gotcha.
And it's a well-structured environment. I think as a parent and a parent of a child with some developmental issues, I believe strongly, and I see it every day in the school, these children thrive when they're given that kind of structure. They're given every support they need to reach their expectations and their goals, but they do have very specific goals that they each individually have been established for them to try to meet, either behaviorally, academically, impulse, socially, I mean, you name it. And it's 24/7, and they're reinforcing it and teaching it. It's really very impressive.
So it's very intensive. And so the parents come to you with... they must have some background in this type of work before they get to you, right?
They do, and certainly they have an enormous appreciation for helping at-risk children.
Mm-hmm.
When they come to us, we put them through rigorous screening, and then we put them through a three-week intensive pre-service training. So we teach them all of the skills. We help them understand the behaviors and the appropriate behaviors that these children need to be aware of. And they are provided with support. They have a consultant that works with them once they're in the home and in place to help them work with the children.
I'm just curious, are these younger couples, older couples? Is it a range?
And they tend to be on the younger side.
Mm-hmm. Maybe before they have...
Young is relative.
I agree with that.
And they can have their own children, too.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what I was just going to ask.
It really is fascinating to see the older children interact as role models, if you will, which mm-hmm. I think is important for the younger siblings.
So some of them do have their own children.
Yes,
they bring into the program.
Yeah.
That's just what I was going to ask, if that was a possibility or not.
Absolutely.
And they teach them life skills. I mean, cooking, cleaning, all the things as parents of two teenagers myself are important for these children to have as they go out. Manners, mm-hmm. Shaking somebody's hand, looking them in the eye when they meet them. All important things that will help them either in the work or in the environment once they graduate.
Right. And so when they do graduate. I guess you were referring to the school, but before we get to John G.
No, that's actually in the homes too.
In
I
the
think
homes.
They have
okay.
very, you know, they have mm-hmm. Zones. I think one of the kids referred to it. They rotate. So 1 week he might be responsible for keeping the living room neat. And the next week it might be the kitchen. And 1 week they're cooking and the next week they're cleaning the bathrooms. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's really fascinating to watch.
Yeah, they really do become responsible members of the family.
Exactly.
It's all about family, and just as in a normal family, your kids have chores, they have responsibilities, everyone supports each other, and that's the way it is in our homes.
Great. So how long do they stay in your homes, the children?
The average stay right now is between 7 and 9 months. Some children stay longer. Some are able to move on more quickly. Our goal is to move a child as quickly and as safely as possible back into a less restrictive environment, back into the community, either in foster care or their home of origin.
Okay. And so just quickly, if you are just joining us, you're listening to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 FM. Today I'm speaking with some representatives from Virginia Home for Boys and Girls, and we are in the midst of our pledge drive. So I hope you'll call 622-9747 or go to WRIR.org to make your donation. WRIR provides unique, locally produced programs, and if you appreciate having a place to learn about local news, local community change efforts, then go ahead and make a donation to WRIR. Keep this volunteer-driven effort going, and you know our locally produced midday shows feature topics that matter to all of us, and we get to hear from people that are doing the hard work to truly make a difference, like Claiborne Mason and Pendle Wisnett, who are with me here today. So getting back to the group home model, you said that with the teaching parents. They're there with you for about 7 to 9 months, some a little longer, some a little shorter. The children are. The parents are staying there long term. Now, I understand that recently, maybe a few years ago, there were some changes in public funding streams that impacted the available funding for group homes. Did that impact Virginia Home for Boys and Girls?
It does impact us. There were restrictions put in place about which children could be referred to a group home. There will always be a need for group homes, and we believe, particularly with the teaching family model, that we provide the highest level of care that a child can expect to receive in this type of setting. We also go above and beyond what the funding provides, if you will. The funding that does come from the state government provides for the basics of the group home therapeutic approach, but it is our intention to provide everything we can for these children to mirror what it is like to really live in a family. A lot of these kids come to us from broken homes, and they may never have actually lived in a place as nice as our homes or in a place within a as loving and nurturing an environment. So through our philanthropy efforts, we aim to provide that higher level of above and beyond care and service to our kids.
And Pendle, you said that you're there on campus on a regular basis, so you see how the group homes operate. Have you been struck by how different it is from maybe some other settings serving this population?
Dramatically. And I think the one thing, having worked with a lot of children who are from broken homes and difficult home situations, there's a certain level of calm, I think, on the campus and particularly in the school that I think, quite honestly, a lot of our public schools could learn from. I mean, the children have goals, again, that I mentioned in terms of their behavior. They are given points toward those goals that at the end of the week they can turn in for either there's a school store of sorts or activities, which I think is a real life model. I mean, and there's no yelling, there's no threatening, there's no, how many times do I have to tell you, the class doesn't stop when there's one child not doing what they're supposed to be doing. That child individually will see the consequences of their behavior, but it doesn't stop the learning for the whole class at a time, which I think so many of these kids, I think just a calm, stable environment within the classroom and within the home is such a difference than what they've had. I've seen the impact literally within a matter of weeks once the children see that no matter what they do, and they might test it a little bit because sometimes that's, unfortunately, their impulse control issues or mental illness, that they're still going to get the same level of calm, the same stability approach. I think then they start to kind of settle in and realize it's a very safe place within which to operate.
Yeah, I think that's true for any of us.
Exactly.
Really.
It really is.
If you're moving from crisis to crisis, it's hard to settle in and focus. And so Virginia Home for Boys and Girls is providing that place where they can have a stable environment for a period of time. Now, for the John G. Wood School, tell us a little bit about who you're serving there, because it's more than just the students that are in the group homes, correct?
That is correct. About a third of the children who live on our campus attend the John G. Wood School, which is an alternative education private day school. The other group home students attend public school. So within our school, we now have about 45 children enrolled. The majority of them are actually private day students who come from other localities, Henrico, the city of Richmond, Chesterfield, and others.
And so they're referred by their school system?
They are, yes.
And the schools have identified them as potentially benefiting from your educational program?
Yes, if it's deemed that they require an individualized education plan, an IEP, then they meet the criteria to be referred to an alternative education school where their needs are met in a much different way. We do try to create an environment much like the public school system. The kids change classes during the day.
They take SOLs.
They take SOLs, yes. There's a lot in common with the public school system, but we have a different way of teaching to their needs.
Gotcha. And so, Pendle, that's where you're most actively involved as a volunteer at the home?
Yes, I'm a tutor in the school. I typically go about twice a week. A lot of these kids, because of their behavior issues, are often behind academically as well. And the school's wonderful about taking the children from where they are behaviorally, academically, socially, and then setting goals for them to bring them up. And that's part of what I do is go in the classroom, work with the kids. Part of it is just trying to get them to try. So often it's easier for them just to say, I can't do it. I don't know how to do it. I've never been good at this. or to attend. A lot of them have attention issues, impulse control issues, and just literally need somebody to sit there with them and kind of keep them on task and encourage them, find their strengths, help them find their strengths, because so often because of their behavior, they've had people point out, if you will, what things they don't do well.
And right. And really, trying to, all their lives in schools, they've probably been told that they're not doing well.
And at a certain point, you know, I see it initially when I start working with them. I was working with two boys this week, and they were typing out an answer, and they're almost embarrassed to let me know that they don't know how to spell something. But once they see that I'm not going to judge them, I'm going to support them and help them and maybe find another way to say it or just let them spell it phonetically, then they kind of, again, see that it's a safe environment to try and to fail within, which I think is important for all learning.
Is the school serving the same age group, that 11 to 17 age group?
It is.
Mm-hmm. And they stay for the whole school year, or they come and go?
They come and go.
Okay.
We usually see a surge in enrollment shortly after the school year starts, once the student returns to school, and then they can start working with the administrators to determine whether or not their placement is correct. Likewise, we see a little bit of a surge after the second semester. But again, like in our group homes, we really want the child to get back to their school, their home school, as quickly as possible. That's the most effective place for them to be.
Okay. Right. So your goal for success is really to get them to a place where they can be successful in their home environment.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of support, too, for the family. There's counselors, there's nurses. A lot of it is teaching the children what to do when they feel that sense of frustration or disappointment or anger or whatever it is, helping them develop skills that they can then take back to their own home and their own school.
So as a tutor, you're dealing with that or working with them on that every day. Now, I imagine as a tutor, it must get discouraging from time to time.
You know, I can't say that it has. I'm on my second year. I have experienced that before as a tutor, but not at John G. Wood. I think, again, because they have very specific goals in terms of their behavior, very rarely do you find the child that literally just won't even try, has no desire to meet whatever incentive that they're, maybe it's a field trip, and they do some great field trips. Again, back to Claiborne's point about making that real life experience. I think the hardest part for me that does get discouraging is seeing sometimes it bleeds in what they're dealing with in their own personal lives or what they've had to deal with. I had a young lady once that was very upset, and I said, you know, you just don't seem like yourself today. And I try not to pry too much because I think it's a very painful, often raw experience when they first get there. But her father had not done something in accordance with the law, and she wasn't going to get to see him that weekend. I don't care how old you are, what school you're in, that's tough. And very few of us would be equipped to deal with that. But the support that they have in terms of the counselors and the teachers is what's really impressive.
Yeah, what's really making a difference for each of the students that are coming across the door. So I know that it's an endeavor that is costly. And so how are you able to support all of the services that you're doing at the home?
Yeah, we as we mentioned before, we do have state funding that comes along with the referrals when the child is deemed appropriate for placement in the home or the school. Philanthropy is a big part of what we are about in order to provide those above and beyond services. So we have a strong philanthropy team that really encourages the community to step forward and to support our mission. We also are fortunate to have an endowment that where our donors who have built up our endowment have done so in order to provide some ongoing support.
And I guess since you've been around for over 150 years, that does become a steady source of support, unlike for some newer nonprofits. But you also have a special event coming up, right?
We do. On Friday, April 5th, we are the beneficiary of the Bazaar Bazaar spring event called the Spring Spree, held out at the Richmond International Raceway. And what they've done is allowed us to invite folks to come out early from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Before the actual show begins, so shoppers can come in and have private shopping, get great parking, shop stroller-free, enjoy goodies and giveaways, all to benefit Virginia Home for Boys and Girls.
That's great. So that's the Bazaar Bazaar on April 5th, you said?
Yes, Friday, April 5th.
That's an opportunity for people to come out, see some different arts and crafts, different mm-hmm. vendors, and also support a great mission at the same time.
Absolutely. And tickets can be purchased at our website, vhbg.org.
vhbg.org. And that's where I'm sure you can learn about all kinds of ways to engage with Virginia Home for Boys and Girls. Now, Pendle, I know you were named Volunteer of the Year. I'm just curious, how did you even get engaged in the first place? How did you learn about it?
Well, I drive by there all the time, and as I mentioned, I work with younger students, and so I lost my father when I was young, and if it weren't for the extended support of my family, I sometimes wonder what position we would be in. And often the children you meet, that's really the difference between what they've struggled with and what I or others have, because they don't have that support system, extended support of family or community around them. So I thought, well, this might be a good fit for me. And then I went and I found out that they were older, that they were middle and high schoolers. And I thought, oh, I don't know. And then I found out that they weren't just typical middle schoolers and high schoolers. They were children that didn't fit into the public school system. And I, again, had a little bit of hesitation, but I continued to proceed. And on my very first day, after going through extensive background checks, et cetera, was also the first day for another young man. And he had, I think, was on his eighth placement and was really struggling that first day because they don't have any choice sometimes about getting placed there. And he was emotionally and physically withdrawn. But when I saw this behavior specialist get literally down on the floor with him and approach him and just very gently talk to him and see him come out even within the class, and then to see him today, you would not believe it's the same child. I thought, this is a really good fit for me. It really is. It's such a positive environment, and I've just get such joy out of it. Just yesterday, two of the boys were asking me again. They said, "Dana, you don't get paid to come here." They get such a kick out of that. And one of them said, "Yeah, man, she doesn't get paid to come here." But it's a real one of those true where you can help out. What you get back is worth much more.
Yeah, I can hear it in your voice and see it.
It
in your
is.
Eyes,
it really is. I've gotten so attached to some of these kids. And one of them yesterday said, "Hey, man, she's not for you. She comes just for me."
Oh.
You can't help but feel a little warmth in your heart from that.
Oh, certainly. Now, Claiborne, how can other people, if they're interested in volunteering, I'm sure you have other mm-hmm. volunteer needs as well, aside from just tutors, how can people learn about your volunteer needs?
Right. Well, again, our website is a great resource to find out more, www.vhbg.org. And there are lots of ways to get involved. We have events that require where we can use volunteer support. Companies can bring groups in and play games with the kids or host a cookout. Individuals can come in and on a Sunday afternoon teach a skill or a hobby with a group of our kids. We also have on our website a wish list of things that the people can help support us through donations, things that just help make a house a home, bed linens and towels, things for the home, things for the school, school supplies, pencils, art supplies, that type of thing. It's all listed on our website.
Right, so it sounds like it's a variety of ways to get involved at many different levels.
Yes.
All right. Well, if you are just joining me, we're speaking with Claiborne Mason and Pendle Winston from the Virginia Home for Boys and Girls, and they've been sharing some information about what they're doing to help at-risk children in the community. They do have an event coming up. When was that event again?
Friday, April 5th from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m.
I've got my spring spree.
The Spring Spree at the Bazaar Bazaar.
And I mm-hmm. was going to add, if you don't mind, I got involved from looking at the website, and I saw on the wish list there was a bike. A young man was graduating and needed a bike as his primary source of transportation, and I was fortunate to be able to find it. He picked it out on Target website. We took it over there. And then again, in terms of life skills, I got this beautiful thank you note because they teach the importance of gratitude. And it said, quote, and I still have it, "I didn't know people like you existed in the world."
Oh.
And all we did was take a bike, but I do think that as a community, we have a certain obligation to teach them that there are people, many more, of course, like me and others, mm-hmm. that care for them and are concerned about their future and want to do everything we can to help them.
I think sometimes that's all it takes is knowing that there is somebody out there that
it's
cares.
True.
Somebody out there that wants to see you succeed.
And
then you might rise
true.
To that occasion. Yeah. Well, again, Claiborne Mason, president of Virginia Home for Boys and Girls, Pendle Winston, the Volunteer of the Year for Virginia Home for Boys and Girls for all your great work at the John G. Woods School, as well as other things. What's that website one more time?
It's www.vhbg.org.
Great. Well, thanks so much for sharing this really important information about some very important work that's going on in Richmond. Before signing off, I'd like to share my thanks for Jay Westerman, who was WRIR's Volunteer of the Year, by the way.
Oh.
And also Andrew Hawes, who's been serving as sound engineer on the show. Jesse Johnson is out there volunteering on that complicated soundboard, and you'll hear this word volunteer over and over because WRIR is a volunteer-powered effort. But we do rely on your support. So, listeners, if you appreciate having this local voice on the airwaves, please visit WRIR.org and make your donation. We really do rely on your support to keep the transmitters transmitting, keep the computers plugging away, etc. My name is Elaine Summerfield, and you've been listening to Inspire Indeed, a show that focuses on community issues through the lens of nonprofits. I hope you learned something new on the show today, and that you're ready to go out and make a difference with your deeds.